You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Just in the nick of time is the one and only, a man who needs no introduction on this program, Michael Musselman. What is up, big man? Where you been? Where were you? What's going on?
You just introduced me, so why does it make no sense?
You make no sense to me. Speak the English. What are you doing? What's going on this morning in Texas? How are things in Texas?
Things are good. The temperature is kind of back up to normal. Light jacket weather, I should say.
There you go, which is what's appropriate in Texas, right? Sweatshirt, light jacket. You get more than that, people start looking around like, what's going on?
Yeah, well, you got to break out the winter jacket, the skiing jacket. One of the guys, the former FBI guy, he had his, Arctic parka stuff on. We were all making fun of him last time. What the hell are you doing?
Cold,
and
man.
He's blue. Everything he's got is blue. And his jacket was bright blue. His hat was bright blue. So he gives a shit about that too.
You think? Hello, man. I'm just with it.
Yeah, but you know what? He's the guy right now. Where they're talking about the Waco thing. He was at Waco. He was part of the FBI. Whole thing during the Waco incident. So,
really,
yeah, really cool.
What do those guys say about Waco, Mike?
A lot of them said, if you read a lot about it, it didn't need to end like that. It didn't need to get to that escalation. It was a botched assault by the ATF and caused the Branch Davidians to, be convinced that they're, the government was coming to kill them. And so David Koresh is kind of the way he talked to people and the way his sermons were, they were, for people like that, that probably low self-esteem, needed something in their life, he fulfilled this. Because people ask all the time, man, I would never, never, ever, get involved in a cult like that. Well, I don't know if those people thought that either, the day before they joined it. Tomorrow, gee boy, I'm looking for a cult of pure destruction.
How far is Waco from you?
It's like a couple hours, 3 hours.
Waco is, so everybody remembers, happened in 1993. On April 19th, and they were a sect that separated from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1955. It was led by a guy named David Koresh, and it was headquartered in a small town called Axtell, Texas, I guess, which is just outside
Just outside Waco.
Just outside Waco. So, again, and they were suspected of what, Mike? Weapons violations?
Yeah, that's what initially tipped them off. They were buying weapons and explosives. And so the ATF got involved. And, you know, the thing, you look at this, and it's like, they could have arrested David Koresh at any time in town. When he went to town, walking around by himself, they could have walked up to him, plain clothes, and said, hey, come with me, and put him on the car hood. But, no, I mean, they waited until they were all boxed in, and they, I mean, it was kind of screwy, man.
And so, again, the ATF goes out there, and what, four agents got killed? Something like that?
Yeah, four agents, I think.
And that was the initial event, right?
And then the FBI took over.
Right, and then there was the standoff that took place that lasted, hold on, I'm reading, 51 days.
Right.
And then a total of 76 people died in that. Think about that.
Yeah.
76 people died. That's more people that were killed than in Las Vegas. In Las Vegas. I've seen pictures released of the inside of his room, the shooter in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Have you seen those?
No, not really. I'm waiting for tomorrow. Tomorrow night starts the whole, I think, I'm watching it on Paramount Network, but I know it's on other networks. But it's called Inside Waco or Waco, and
yes.
It's like a six-part story that's going to start tomorrow night.
Inside Waco.
It's let's see, wrong button. Mute that. I was listening to the news today, if you could tell. But I'm going to get mute because I wasn't really paying attention to the news. So it starts tomorrow. It's called Waco. I'm watching it on Paramount HD, Direct TV, channel 241. Strangers Across the Street. And it's a miniseries. I think it's six parts, 1 hour a piece. And this has got the actors in it. You know, John Leguizamo. And the guy who plays David Koresh in this looks just like him. I don't know where they get these guys.
So it starts tonight or tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, Wednesday night.
Huh, I didn't even know Paramount had a TV network.
Yeah, Paramount.
241.
Yeah, DirecTV.
Yeah, I just saw it.
And there's some really good stuff. Like yesterday they did the whole Indiana Jones thing.
So what did you do? Did you sit around and watch Indiana Jones movies and your Indiana Jones
costume
all day?
Me and my daughter sat down and watched a little bit about them, but not all of them.
Those are great movies, though. It's honestly like Back to the Future movies. Talk about a great series of movies. My kids were little when those things were on. They were. I could recite some of those movies to you. Cause, you know, turn them on and they said.
Yeah, they were fun movies.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox is awesome in that. And at the root of it all is he had an anger problem. When you called him a chicken. What's wrong, McFly?
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, Marty McFly. What's wrong, McFly? Chicken. So, yeah.
I wasn't a fan of that.
Marty McFly. He's really sensitive being called a chicken.
Yeah.
Interesting. Are you watching Chain of Command?
I'm recording it.
Okay.
Because I want to watch it with no interruptions.
All of them. Who is it? Is it Matt Reed? Battalion Commander?
Matty Reed, yep.
He's
Colonel Matty Reed.
Yeah, Colonel Matty Reed. He was, he did the first rotation. So, he boomed on TV last night.
Yeah, I saw him on.
But it's really cool. For those of you who haven't seen it, you get a chance to see guys like Joe Dunford in action. The things, the way he handles things, the things that he says. Mike, I just played General Mattis's, Secretary Mattis's National Defense Strategy speech that he gave last week at John Hopkins. He's awesome.
Right.
He's just awesome.
Yeah.
And the nation needs men like this to serve and to say what's right. And, you know, there was a line in his speech that is awesome in that he says, look, without congressional funding, this national defense strategy is a hallucination. I was like, whoa, that's awesome. Well said, well said. But he's great. But again, in chain of command, you get to see cameras were allowed to follow the Secretary of Defense and other people around starting in late 2016 and throughout 2017, and now they produce this thing. And it's really cool because you get to see, you know, a lot of how they do, you know, how Mosul got done. And it's a lot of stuff that I know that I did for a living, that our boy Momentum Man Kurt Knowles did, and then all the other pieces that go with it, so it's pretty interesting. I'm curious to see when they go back to Afghanistan, since we've given up most of the real estate, what that looks like. But so very interesting these things on. Yes.
What today, March? Here's this day in history.
hold on, let me play the
what
music.
What happened?
Hold on, let me play the music. Today's my cousin Tom's. It's his 58th birthday. One of my best man at my wedding, one of my best friends ever in the world. No?
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Big Tom, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Let me
okay.
play.
Ready?
No. I got to play the appropriate the big music. Hold on one second. Give me a chance. Here you go.
Ready? This day in history. The toy company Wham-O produces the first Frisbee, 1957.
That's it?
No, I got more. Here's the good one. Ready? Hold on.
Yes.
In 1870, soldiers massacre the Ram camp of India. Oops.
Who'd they massacre?
That was before GPS.
No, okay. Where did that happen?
I don't know. Hang on. Hulk Hogan beats the Iron Sheik to win the first WWF title.
Nice. Hulk Hogan still around, still talking about possibly a run for Senate in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, so it was Colonel Eugene Baker ordered his men to attack a sleeping camp of peaceful Blackfeet along the Marias River in northern Montana. Ooh, Montana man.
Montana man, he won't be happy about that. Stirring up problems up in his home state. Nice going, boys.
The army sneaks in and massacres a peaceful camp of sleeping Indians.
What year was that?
1870.
When is Custer killed? Custer's killed after that. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. That'll little bighorn. It took place in 1876.
Yeah, 6 years later. Right, I was going to say that was a great victory for the Sioux warriors, but it ultimately got them annihilated. And I was wondering if this was because, you know, once the blood is up, we're killing everybody. They killed our guys. They're going to pay. So anyway. All right, keep going.
There was no Sioux Indian.
I'm sorry. Pardon me?
It was the Lakota. The Dakota. The Northern Cheyenne. The Arapaho. And the Crow Scout. No Sioux.
The Lakota and Nakota, those are Sioux tribes.
Well, gotta be more specific.
Oh, bullshit, man. Just because you don't know.
It was part of the Great Sioux War.
Stop it, okay? Just stop it. The Sioux Nation is made up of three dominant tribes.
Yes, I know.
Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota. Okay, so
the Hopi Indians fall under the Pueblo tribe. Pueblo Nation.
Exactly. They were not at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Okay, just so you. Just
no,
so.
They were busy making Katina dolls and.
Exactly, down in the mountains of Arizona. Okay, what else happened on this day?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff.
Like, anything interesting?
Yeah, there's...
Does anything break squelch?
The North Korea seizes the U.S. ship Pueblo, 1958.
That was bad. That was bad because, those guys were vilified saying that, you know, they were a communication ship. And they're doing what, there's a Russian ship off our coast doing what, you know, what the Pueblo was doing, which is just capturing signals, intelligence, stuff like that. And the guy, I'll never forget the guy's name, the commander of the Pueblo, Lloyd Bucher. And he was vilified for not fighting the ship and not going down with the ship, being captured, paraded around, and all of that. And
okay, I'm going to give you the title. You tell me the year.
Okay.
That happened this time. The A-Team debuts on NBC.
1983. Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't an A-Team guy. Although you couldn't go anywhere without people doing just a lousy impersonation of Mr. T, right?
Yeah. I pity the fool.
Exactly. Exactly. It took Gunner a nanosecond to wheel his lame-ass impersonation of Mr. T out. But, yeah, Mr. T.
I pity the fool.
I pity the fool. And he was on everything. Remember, he was even in the WWF. The one thing that WWF did was they brought in all those guest people that would be big and that would do stuff like this. And then they would go in the ring and get slammed. Like, remember Pete Rose getting slammed in the ring? Donald Trump got slammed. Or I don't know if Donald, he probably slammed somebody, but,
right.
But they always had all kinds of famous people that would hop in the ring and for a publicity plug, but pretty funny too, I might add. Pretty funny.
Oh yeah.
All right. What else? All right. Give me another one.
That's okay. Let me give me the year. First woman medical doctor.
First woman medical doctor. Officially licensed that would have got through school. There had to be some liberal school that would have done that in the 1849. Whoa! Old Mac got that one wrong. What school?
Yeah. Elizabeth Blackwell is granted a medical degree from Geneva College in New York.
Wow.
Becoming the first female to be officially recognized as a physician in U.S. history.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Give me another one.
What year was Hood removed from command?
John Bell Hood, 1864.
Ooh, off by a year.
Damn it!
1865.
John Bell Hood, I think he had by that time, he had a leg and an arm amputated. He was all morphined up, and
he requested to be relieved a week prior.
After the Battle of Franklin, I think it was.
He did Antietam.
Right, did Antietam. Does Gettysburg.
He did the counterattack in Antietam.
Does Gettysburg, and then he goes down to Tennessee, where he's in command, and they get their ass kicked in around Nashville. And doesn't go well. I think he's wounded again, or he had been wounded before.
Yeah, after being wounded at the Battle of Gettysburg,
right?
He was transferred to the Army of Tennessee. He was wounded again, losing a leg in Chickamauga.
Chickamauga, yeah, it is.
And then,
ouch.
Yeah, and then shortly after that, he was released.
So after Chickamauga, he's all like coked up. You know, and then but he's in command at the Battle of Franklin, I think, and they say, yeah, you got to go after that. So I was close. Boom, one for Mac.
Insulin injection aids diabetic patient.
Insulin injection aids. Well, that had to be like 1960.
1922.
Damn it. Obviously, medical history is not my strong suit. I would have stayed.
Okay, here we go.
I would have stayed away from that on Jeopardy.
FDR writes a letter to the Baseball Writers Association.
He would have written a letter to the Baseball Writers Association for what reason?
For the attending, excusing himself from attending the annual dinner of the Baseball Writers Association.
Oh.
Instead, he sends a letter to be read in his absence. What year?
1941.
37.
Well, why didn't he go in 37? What else did he have to do? Well, we're just like living through the Depression, for God's sakes. Nothing else going on. I thought 1941 because he was. Yeah, I've got other things on my plate right now.
I think you'll get this one though.
Okay.
Nixon announces the peace settlement and reached in Paris.
1972.
Ooh. 73.
Yeah, don't change dicks in the middle of a screw. Vote for Nixon in 72.
Yeah.
Nixon was, he had his big place in San Clemente. If you drove down the 5 back in the day, you know.
Yeah, I lived right behind it.
Right? Back in the day, that's where Tricky Dick lived. And then after he resigned, you know, he lived in San Clemente. And then he's a big baseball fan. He used to come to Angel games, and I remember he would park in a player's parking lot, and he would come in probably like about the second inning, and he would go up and he'd sit in Gene Autry's box, and this is before the day they had cameras that would show people in places like that, and then he would leave in about the eighth inning so he wouldn't get caught in traffic with people yelling at him and stuff like that. And I remember meeting him. Walking around the corner, going to the ball game, and I got there late, and I got out, and I'm walking, and all of a sudden this door opens out of this limo, and here he is, Tricky Dick. He was not a big man. He was a small, he's like, I don't know, he's shorter than I am, and I'm 5'9¾". And so, I was like, whoa, what's up, little guy? He's like, hey, Mac, what's up? I'm like, nothing, man, just going to the ball game. How about you? How about you? Yeah, nothing going on in San Clemente, man. Just hanging out, me and Pat. Not much to do when you've been booted out of the office of the presidency. So, anyway. Hey, have you seen these stories? And what do you make of them? Initial stories about these text messages that talk about secret society and stuff like that. Do you think there's anything to that, Mike? Have you seen those?
No.
Yeah, it talks about it's those two FBI agents that were lovers that were sharing text messages, and there's stuff in there about evidently secret society inside the FBI and a quote-unquote insurance policy insinuating that there was something that was, you know, relative to Trump. So
yeah, send them to jail.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Something is inherently wrong, and I think I don't know. And you know, with organizations like the Department of Justice, when your politics overwhelm your oath, and I just don't get that. And you know, for people that don't raise their hand and don't swear an oath and don't understand that separation is like the separation of church and state. I check that at the door of my house when I leave in the morning. It doesn't go to work with me. I'm somebody else there. And Mike and I were talking about one day, you know, it raises its head in the Marine Corps when you're supposed to swap out, you know, presidents, you know, and like people are like, I'm not putting that guy up. Like, shut your mouth and put that up right now. Hey, you put that up. No, you put it up. And it goes up. And that's the end of it. That's how you put an end to that shit. But I don't know. It just seems like there's too many data points right now. In the Department of Justice and the FBI, and you're just looking like all this shit, you know, this deep state and all this other stuff that you've heard kicked around, in my opinion, by right-wing, you know, conspiracy theorists. You know, you're starting to see some evidence of it. Maybe not the full-blown what they, you know, were screaming about, but you see enough indicators that cause even somebody like me, who's not even close to that, to go, what the fuck's going on, man? What are these people doing? And so I guess we'll see more, but I just wondered if you had seen those stories.
No, yeah, between Strzok and Lisa Page now.
Yeah. No, that's why. That's why you're in a happy mood, though, because you haven't seen that. That's why you're in a happy mood.
Yeah. If you violate your oath, I think you should go to jail.
Yeah, look, you can do a lot of stuff wrong, you know, but when you violate your oath, and that's almost like conspiracy, you are acting contrary to the principles of the whole institution to begin with. So anyway, I don't know. I we'll see what comes of it. Evidently, there's going to be the Republicans are right now engineering the distribution of that 4-page memo that was discussed last week that said, hey, when the American people read this and see what was going on and what the FBI and the DOJ were doing, the lid is going to blow off this thing. So we'll see about that.
Well, I know the Republicans are asking for a separate probe into the Mueller probe.
Just what we all need, more of that.
Yeah, another probe into a probe.
A probe into a probe into a probe. Email. Mac, ask the gunner about the story about modern infantry Marines. Big changes that's in the Marine Corps times today. All right. Let me pull this up.
Okay.
Rumors have been buzzing since July when images of 1st Battalion 6th Marine Regiment showed grunts kitted out with new tactical vests, headsets,
new helmets,
and op core helmets,
yep,
along with the M27. Let's see. Last December, Secretary of Defense James Mattis told reporters that conventional forces would start assuming greater roles in mission sets that were once the purview of special operations. In fact, that's already happening. Conventional forces and special operators have been working side by side in places like Iraq and Syria. For example, in Syria, small groups of roughly 400 Marines deployed last year to back Syrian Democratic Forces, blah, 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 blah. Mike, truth be told, that's been going on for a lot longer than the last 24 months in terms of special operators working more closely with conventional forces. That's been going on since 2003.
Yeah.
And if you go ahead.
But the whole, this is just a design to get people, get the Marines, the best gear that's available to them. I mean, now they're on comms, everybody can talk to each other, reliable communication. You know, better helmets, better gear.
All right, here you go. The M38 and the M27. First of all, tell everybody, we talked about the M27. What is the M38?
It's the squad designated marksman rifle. So it's the precision rifle. You know, it gives the squad a precision capability, a marksman type into the squad.
So what kind of weapon is it?
What weapon is this?
Yeah,
it's the M27, but with a scope.
Got it. And it's an HK weapon. Well, again, but the M27 has a scope. Yes.
No,
it has an optics.
Well, not in a variable power scope. This is a variable power.
Got it. Okay. All right. So the Corps is starting to designate one Marine in each infantry squad as a marksman and providing the Marine with an M38 rifle, the marksmanship version of the M27. Wow, Mike, you're spot
on.
It's
the Leopold Mark IV. It's a 2 to 5 by 8 power scope.
So what does that do? The M38 is a squad designated marksman rifle, which will allow a Marine infantryman to engage targets at 300 to 600 meters, says Barbara Hamby.
Right.
Okay. Most Marines are going, dude, I do that with iron sights. Why does the dude need a special rifle with that?
Well, now you pick out who you need to shoot. Iron sight, you just shoot.
Got it. The M38 was born out of lessons learned over the course of the last 17 years of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, according to Marine gunner Joel Schwendinger. Know him?
Yep. I know Joel.
You know Joel?
Yeah.
All right. The IAR was a good fit to transition into the designated marksman rifle because of its accuracy and long-range precision. So we got that going for us. The Leopold scope, and talks about how the Marine will have to qualify to get into that position. Laser rangefinder. Marine Corps plans to field new rifle-mounted laser rangefinders that will boost lethality of infantry squads by enabling squad leaders to call in air and artillery strikes. Talk to me. Explain that.
It's the same, basically the same device. It's a laser IR pointer, but it also gives you range to whatever you lay. So,
all right. So,
and little LED, little display.
All right. So, if I'm designating that for air artillery strikes,
it doesn't have that capability. I don't know why they said that, because it's not coded, but it gives you, for calling in an airstrike, it gives you precision to, if you're going to do a direction from me to the target,
right,
it gives you a pretty good position. But it's not a designator in the fact that it's going to send the laser code to
paint
a
it.
Smart munition,
right,
and then guide it down that beam. No.
Okay. With the new device, quote, a squad leader with accurate range data, which is what Mike just described, can quickly assign the appropriate force to eliminate threats, according to Chief Warrant Officer 5, Mark R. Salmon, a Marine gunner. You know Salmon?
Yeah, I know Mark. He's at PPNL. He's at the Pentagon.
All right. This is a huge time savings that results in higher probability of first-round effect on targets, Salmon said. Rangefinder can pinpoint targets up to 1,500 meters away. The Corps has just procured over 300 devices, with another 1,500 on the way sometime in early 2018. Boom. Thermal night vision. Marines are also interested in overhauling night vision devices currently carried by grunts, as commercially available night vision technology has proliferated to enemy fighters. U.S. troops are slowly losing their edge at nighttime on the battlefield. Mike, do you want to explain that to us? Where's Marine Corps going?
Just better capability and better electronics. I mean,
okay.
Everything else gets better and better.
Will you describe to everybody what we currently work with now?
I don't know. I don't. When I was leaving, they were switching out, so I don't know.
Okay. All right. But most guys had a better version of ambient light amplification, right?
Oh yeah.
That's what most Marines have. Now there's thermal.
Yeah, what they call I square, which is just, it gathers ambient light. Thermal sees heat.
So
different wavelength.
Right, different wavelength. So you're talking about different devices.
Completely different device.
Let's see. To bridge the gap, the Corps in December asked the defense industry to provide information about helmet-mounted or hand-carried devices that include both night vision and thermal capability. So that would be
fused. They call it I square fused. So it does both.
Can you?
Because thermal can't see through glass or reflective properties, or I square can penetrate that. So it fuses the images together. So you're seeing both I square and thermal at the same time.
Nice. What about, can you do that in something that's, man portable that you can wear on your helmet?
They got that right now. I mean, that's available right now on weapons and helmet mounted devices. The problem is cost. I mean, the cost is ridiculous.
Is it? But once the DOD buys, it drives the price down for everybody, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The let's see. Thermal night vision. Mar-4 Systems Command may field a similar device for the infantry, but will also consider handheld system. So there you have it.
Right.
All right. New optics. The M38 and M27 will operate different optics, and the Corps is in search for a new day-powered optic. Marines who are issued the new marksmanship rifle will carry a Mark IV Leupold TS-30A2 Mark IV 2.5 by 8 times 36 millimeters, which packs much higher magnification than the standard 3.5 powered advanced combat optical gun sight that is currently mounted on the IAR. That makes sense?
Yep. Yeah, from fixed power, you know, to a variable power. So.
All right. And then the standard IAR optic may also soon be updated for the entire infantry squad. The Corps put out a request for information back in August for a squad common optic. This optic will be variable powered by day optic, Hamby told the Marine Corps Times. The Marine Corps wants a new optic that can range from 600 to potentially 900 meters and weigh under 2.1 pounds, according to the Marine Corps RFI, to the defense industry. Anything there that you can explain to us?
No, I don't know what they're looking at.
All right. Just better stuff, though, bottom line.
Yeah.
Ops Corps helmets, lighter armor. Rumors have been buzzing since July when images of 1/6 Marines from the 2nd Marine Division showed grunts kitted out with new tactical vests, headsets, and Ops Corps helmets. What's an Ops Corps helmet?
It's just a lighter ballistic helmet. Ops Corps. It's a company. Ops Corps actually makes it.
Is the comm suite integrated into the helmet, or is that not?
Yeah, it attaches on the, there's rails on the helmet, and it attaches on the rails.
Got it. Wow. The helmets are popular with special operators because they feature rail mount systems on the side and a distinct design that can comfortably fit large noise-canceling headsets. But the experimental squad led, also known as Uber Squad, led by Gunner Christian Wade, was merely testing out future concepts and operability of new equipment for infantry. So they're explaining the picture. According to officials at Mar-4 Syscom, there are no plans for wider disbursement of the Ops Corps helmets, which commonly is carried by Marine Raiders and other special ops forces. For now, though, the Corps will stick with its standard ECH helmet. Can you explain the ECH helmet?
Well, that's what we wear today. It's the advanced combat helmet. That's the one that we're wearing today.
All right. Fielded in 2014, how is it different from the helmet I wore in 2010, 2011?
It's a little bit higher up on the ears, so you can put, you know, your muffs on. So it's a little bit more low cut. But, like, the ones we had went down over our ears. These are above the ear and then come down back on the neck.
And then the final piece of gear that is in this article, Marines may see lighter body armor and tactical vests in the not-too-distant future. The Corps is still developing the Plate Carrier Generation 3. The new prototype is 23% lighter than what is currently fielded and less bulky, lighter in weight, provides a smaller overall footprint than the current plate carrier while maintaining the same soft armor coverage and protection level. New lighter armor plates are also in the works. The Corps is overhauling its infantry Marines as they begin to take new expanded roles around the globe. Mike, talk to us about you've been involved in this discussion about prototype armor and plates and things like that. Is it easier said than done in order to try to protect from a 7.62 round?
No. I mean, the stuff that we were wearing when we were over there protected that.
Right. But the big challenge is to make that lighter, right?
Right. And that's the biggest problem is how do you make it light and still wearable? There's actually a still work. They do what they call liquid armor.
Whoa.
It's a lot lighter. It's more flexible. And it's a thickening. There's a thickening fluid in there that actually, there's particles that suspend in that liquid. And then when something moving with a lot of energy strikes it, it reacts to that and binds and holds. Pretty neat technology, but the nice thing about liquid armor is they can cool it or heat it too. So in desert temperatures, they can keep it cool, and they keep it cool on your torso. In warm areas, you can actually warm it and keep it warm for your body.
And how does it do that? Some kind of battery?
Yeah, battery device that would, it has, something inside there that, just keeps it a little bit warmer, a little bit cooler. But it's still in laboratory. I mean, that's still years away.
If you, in your opinion, when you left, what was the most pressing need, in terms of equipment? Is it lighter body?
Communication. Better communication.
Better comms.
Reliable communication.
So, and that would be, how would you define better comms? If you were king for a day?
Well, because you want everybody to have the same situation where it's something to squat instead of just the squatter.
Right.
And then he's got to yell it to everybody when you're talking in a normal tone and everybody hears what's going on and everybody knows where the threat is, It just builds better essay, more survivability. But comms is the biggest one.
I just saw the term noise canceling. When we talk about this,
it cuts out decibels.
And what does that?
Anything over 80 decibels, it shuts off.
So what does that? Do I have something inside my ear, or how does it work?
Yeah, you have the earmuffs. No, you have muffs on.
Okay.
That have a battery, and so it allows for ambient noise. You can hear a lot better with them.
Right.
But as soon as something loud takes place, those sound waves hit it, it shuts off, and it acts as ear protection.
All right. It's almost like some kind of baffle of some sort. When it gets to a certain point, it kicks in, and you don't get hit by that.
Yeah. I mean, I shoot with them all the time. I mean, I have a couple pair.
How do those work? Are they the kind that have the center out of it, that little, opening down the center of it? Those are pretty cool.
They're just regular earmuffs. They have little speakers, little microphones on the east end. And then, and you can buy them. I mean, you can get them online. You can get them. Some of them you can get for cheap. I think like $27.
And they're earmuffs. Give me a brand name. No one off the top of your head?
Peltor. Peltor makes them.
Okay. All right. Right. Do you know the earplug I'm talking about? Not muff, but the plug I'm talking about. that has the cap that has like a
that's the Surefire.
Is that who makes it? Yeah. I'll tell you, the first time I saw those things, I was like, wow, check that out. And, explain to everybody what those are.
They're just like noise. They're just noise canceling earplugs. So they work almost the same way, but not as good. But you can get them. I mean, it's the same. If you look them up, you can get them in there. You can get them either electronically or not, but basically they fit into your ear. They're contoured to your ear, and then they keep out loud noises and then allow you to hear, softer noises.
Right. I saw them and I was like, what is that? And it had like a tube that runs down the center. And at the end of the tube on the external part of the plug is this little kind of rubber, plunger. And so you can wear them with the plungers in, which blocks all noise, or you can wear them with the plungers out, which allows some noise in there. And I thought, and this goes back a long time, but when you're the range safety officer, when you put something on to protect your ears, one of the thoughts that goes through your head is somebody's going to yell ceasefire, and I'm not going to hear them. And a lot of times I would not wear ear protection on ranges. Most time I was not in a firing position, but you're still around it, because you want to hear if somebody, if there's a problem, somebody else sees fire. And there was always that concern. And those earplugs address, at least partly address, that issue. So, I thought it was very cool. Mike, email about innovation. Mac, I'm curious. Would it surprise most of us the amount of money that companies are spending to develop products for the Department of Defense? What does a gunner say about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes?
Oh, yeah. There's millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being invested in researching this stuff.
Yeah. Those are, and you, as everybody knows, that is billions of dollars in funding. If you can come up with, for instance, if you could come up with a lighter weight body armor, if you could come up with the material that you know, that could be used to cut that weight in half, you'd be a rich.
Yeah.
You'd be a rich human.
You'd be a rich dude.
Yeah, rich human being.
Generations after you, would be really rich.
Right, because those guys go out every day wearing a lot of weight, and I think after COM, to me, that weight is an issue that you got to work on. And you know, honestly, I mean, if you go someplace where it's humid and hot. Or if it's mountainous, going up in those down mountains and those things, that's an ass kicker. That is an absolute ass kicker. And I was, Carl Marlantis was on yesterday and described what it was like to go into the attack, in the central highlands of Vietnam. And he said, look, we went into the attack in a column because we were going up fingers to get to the NVA once we spotted them. And that's how we went into the attack. And, you know, you're talking about over 100 degrees with, you know, 90-something% humidity and, you know, leaving our packs at the bottom of a mountain to go into the attack two-thirds of the way up the hill and then fight up the hill. And I was thinking, man, could we do that today with the additional weight? Or would you be so gassed when you got up there you'd simply – and I don't care how tough you were. I mean, the mountains of Vietnam, that's not bullshit. They're not foothills. They're straight up mountains. So, you can see, obviously why, it's an issue. All right. What else you got going today?
Not much today.
Not much? No, no election stuff. No. When's the next?
No, that was last night.
How'd shooting go?
Shooting went great.
Did you go shoot yesterday, or did you blow it off?
No, I shot a little bit, but then I had we had the election stuff that night.
Now, was that the event that you've been working on for the last couple weeks?
No, this one was in another location, another region within Granbury.
Ah.
It was like a meet and greet, meet the candidate type thing. Nice. And then tomorrow night we have, we start the debates. So this Wednesday is the debates for commissioners, next week the judges, and then next week is for state legislature.
The first debate I was involved with when I got elected, when I wasn't supposed to be running for office, I was in Fallujah. And so, I don't know, I got off at what time? I got off at about 8. And so then I get on the phone to participate in the debate or whatnot. And so I didn't realize, but they were setting me up. I got set up. So they said,
right,
the first question, kind of a special question for Major McNamara, who joins us by phone. And so it was me and four other candidates running for a seat on the city council. And they said, the question says, and one of my opponents wrote the question, will you promise the citizens of Grand Forks that you will not deploy with the Marine Corps again? And I said, well, first of all, let me just tell you, you know, one of the greatest parts of my life has been the Marine Corps. And so if you would only vote for me on the condition that I tell you that I won't deploy again, then don't vote for me. Vote for somebody else. Because I deploy because my country, I'm qualified, and when Marines call me and say, we need you, there's no way I could ever turn my back on it. And so, by all means, if you're concerned about that, don't vote for me. And a guy later wrote me, he said, you know, they hated that answer. It was a great answer. And, but, you know, the way politics gets played and the chicken shit way that it gets played, that's not what they expected. I said, well, it was just the truth. I wasn't, you know. But, you know, Mike, they're interesting in that it's a chess game between candidates. I remember being asked, how green will you be if you're elected? And I was the last one of the five to go, and everybody talked about how green they'll be. And I said, well, first of all, of all the planets I've ever lived on, Earth is my favorite, okay? And I want to be a good steward of it, okay? And the question I would ask you is, can I raise your taxes to be green? And if the answer to that is no, which I will assume it will be, then the question is, what are you willing to give up? What services are you willing to give up so that I can make the city greener? Because I'm happy to. But in a zero-sum game, what services will you, you know, curbside pickup of your leaves? You ready to take your leaves to the landfill? Oh, you don't want to do that. Do you know that we pay money to recycle? Because the cost of trucking it to the Twin Cities is more than what we ultimately get back when they, you know, take the plastic and everything else they recycle. Do you know that? Oh, no, I didn't. Well, that's the truth. So if you tell me not, then what has to happen is you have to rack and stack priorities with me so that I understand what you want and that we'll spend money like that. And if recycling is low on the priority list, then I won't be very green because it's more important that I'm fiscally responsible to you than I'm green. Everybody's like, whoa, listen to that. I said, yeah, boom, bitches. So I enjoyed the little chess game and the discussions and whatnot because they're all bullshit. Most of them are bullshit people with bullshit things to say. And then they run into, like, I would say people of substance that think about these things and have lived lives where they've been leaders. And your candidate's a guy like that. So you have to keep us posted. Are you gonna weigh in on the debate? Do you have any role in it?
No, other than just supporting. No, right. I'm not in the debate now.
All right. Well, maybe if they're in a pinch, maybe you might want to hop in there.
Yeah. Right.
Right. No. All right, bud. We will talk to you on Thursday. Have a good day.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
And there you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman here on a Tuesday edition, Big Tom birthday. Big Tom birthday edition of All Marine Radio. All right. If you're just tuning in, mandatory listening. So it's a good thing you tuned in today. What's coming up, we'll check news headlines, and then you'll hear the speech that the Secretary of Defense gave last week at Johns Hopkins University on the National Defense Strategy. Yeah, so you should be fired up about that. First of all, it's a great speech. And you're going to hear the work of an incredible man who's lived a life of service to the nation. Secretary Mattis has had, there are striking similarities in his life to George Marshall. Marshall not as often a combatant commander as Mattis, but still, in terms of scope of their responsibilities, many, many similar lines to George Marshall, which I don't know. That's a pretty rare company. And so his speech is coming up, and then Garrett walks us through improving gear equipment. Yeah, how about that? Which is kind of interesting. At least I think it is. So, again, want to wish my cousin Tom one of my great lifelong friends, best man at my wedding. Happy 58th birthday, Big Tom. Anyway, and to everybody else, have a great day on a Tuesday. And again, this program repeats itself momentarily, so don't touch that dial, whatever you do. So, and again, tomorrow, Beth Harvey going to join us. We're going to talk about court-martials, United States Navy. Yeah, and what's the threshold that has to be met? How is that going to work? Or not? So join us tomorrow. And then on Thursday, we'll continue with the United States Navy. And Jeff Zulowitz, who's a writer for Navy Times, is going to join us. He's written a ton about what's happened. So, but one of the things that he's going to do, I talked to him yesterday, is explain to us how the Navy's configured now. Now, the Navy's changed some of the way they do business in an attempt to, in my opinion, devote more money to equipment and less to personnel. We're gonna learn a little bit about the Navy tomorrow. I'm sorry, on Thursday. And Jeff, great writer. And you can check his stuff out on Navy Times. He's written a bunch, so all of that. And then next week, as I said, Ken Rogers will join us on Monday. 50 years since Quezon. On Tuesday, Eric Hamill's gonna join us, the writer, who's written almost 50 books about the Marine Corps. And written one about Quezon. So we'll talk to him as well. So have a great day. If you bump into my cousin in Sacramento, make sure you wish him happy birthday. Big Tom, 58. Don't forget the number. Anyway, and happy birthday to anybody else who has a birthday today on January 23rd. Out.